Hello and welcome to our series of podcasts for Equine Health Week 2025 in partnership with Agria, covering all of the key life stages that our horses will go through. In this final episode, we've reached the point that none of us involved with horses really want to think about, but it's one that we must all be prepared for because it's something that if we have horses, we have to anticipate at some point, and that is end of life. It's a sad reality that very few horses will actually pass away naturally, and instead many owners find themselves needing to make a decision around euthanasia if quality of life becomes compromised. Whether this comes as a result of illness, injury, accident, or old age, having a plan in place can make this very difficult situation a little easier for both you and your horse. Joining me to discuss this potentially quite emotional topic are two experts. I've got, first of all, Alistair Crozier, who is Clinical Director at Parkside Equine Veterinary Group in Dundee, Scotland. He qualified from the Royal Dick Vet School in 1988 and joined the practice in 2002, initially as a mixed vet, but soon focused his attention to large animals. He's also a member of British Equestrian's Equine Infectious Diseases Advisory Group. Welcome, Alistair.
Thank you.
And also joining us is Dr. Amelia Cameron, who is a research fellow in equine welfare from the University of Nottingham's School of Veterinary Medicine and Science. Her research has focused on end-of-life care and euthanasia decision-making for horses, and she's currently developing a guide and plan for owners to help them through this process, which should be available freely later this year. Welcome, Amelia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, let's get straight into this then, guys. Why is it so important that we're proactively planning for end of life? Because obviously it's not something that any of us really want to think about.
I'm in practice and some of the time it's for the unexpected. If you haven't got a plan in place and suddenly something happens to your horse, say even if you're not there, who's decision making, you know, is the livery yard owner got authority to do so? Does your vet even know that the livery yard owner has authority? So things like that, it's not a nice thing to have to think about, but it helps in what would otherwise be even more of a stressful scenario.
And also I think like planning for end of life doesn't have to only be for euthanasia. It can be thinking, are there issues that I want to, like, that I'm worried about for my horse? Do I know, like, how me and my vet are monitoring these issues? Being aware of like what potential changes to look out for or indications of pain, and knowing when you should contact your vet so that these can be addressed and that quality of life you can try and maintain quality of life as your horse ages. And as well as like Alistair said, having kind of knowing for euthanasia what are the practical aspects as well that you want to have planned, because it is a very stressful decision to have to make, and having thought about this in advance can make it a bit less stressful when it has to be done.
And I think that quality of life that you mentioned, that's quite key with all of this, because obviously if there can be a temptation, because we don't want to think about having to put our beloved horse to sleep, to delay that a little bit and maybe end up actually putting it further and further away. And that quality of life can then deteriorate, I guess.
Yeah, I think defining quality of life is almost quite a difficult decision for people. When I speak about it with some of my owners and clients, we're trying to avoid unnecessary pain or suffering. It's a lovely phrase, that, but that's quite difficult to define. So I often say to folks, if your horse is capable of grazing or forage or grass for most of the day, its quality of life is still good. And if it's able to get up and get down and have its proper REM sleep, without assistance, then its quality of life's probably still good. And if it, obviously walk, trotting, cantering of its own across the fields, so that normal, Does it just look like my horse? Is it bright and happy? But it's all a little woolly, those sorts of definitions. It's hard, and where to draw the line is very individual. For some people, it's sooner than other people, and livery yards are great because there's lots of people. But sometimes, your line will be different to your friend who has a horse next door to use line, and it's difficult to not pass comment on that positively or negatively, and that sometimes can be hard for people going through decision making like this.
Yeah, and I guess it comes down to kind of knowing your individual horse as well. I mean, I know certainly when I've had a horse in the past who was very old, she was getting to this end of life process, and I always said that I knew that she'd reached that point the day she didn't come over to me in the field for her breakfast. So I guess it's kind of, it's having those things in your head, your markers in the sand, that mean, right, okay, this is the point where I need to start thinking about this.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like knowing, like you said, knowing your horse is really important, and knowing like kind of what's normal behavior for them and what are indications that they are, you know, having a good life or not. And yeah, like, or you know, or if they're normally spending a lot of time with a companion and they're withdrawing from that, that could be, you know, another change and things like that to look out for.
Yeah, and I think, as you mentioned, so that's sort of that, maybe trouble getting up, maybe trouble moving around, going off their feed as well, that could be another sign maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and not taking the medication even. Do you know, we've a lot of more chronic diseases that we can do a lot more for these days. But there comes a point sometimes horses just get sick of taking their medication, and not, you know, you don't want to fight with them at the end. Do you know, that's not nice for them either. And you know, all medications carry a risk of side effects. Sometimes the benefits of the medication are generally outweigh the side effects initially. In all cases, but sometimes as we get a little older and other age-related changes happen, then those side effects can not be as insignificant as they were when you started the medication. Those are the types of things to have conversations on, those health checkups that you have with your vet. You know, it's we're doing them from the prescribing point of view, but that's the ideal time to have that conversation with the vet.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is having that relationship with the practitioners around your horse, your vet most fundamentally, but obviously, I guess as well, people like your farrier, if you've got any equine body workers, maybe who can pinpoint signs of pain, who can help you make an informed decision around what your horse's needs might be and whether he is starting to struggle a little bit.
And I think identifying those kind of trusted people that you want to go to, like for advice in advance, can be helpful. Because I think, yeah, like, there can be a lot of input from other people at yards if you're at a big yard. So I think knowing who you want to go to, like writing down, like, hey, my vet, if it's things like, yeah, chronic laminitis, maybe your farrier would be involved. Maybe there's like a trusted person that also knows your horse well that you can take advice from. But and then thinking, okay, maybe I want to filter out some of the other people. So I think having too many opinions can make it quite difficult for owners.
Costs of the care of your older horse are not something we should shy away from. You know, I never want any owners to feel like if they want to bring those sorts of things up as part of the decision-making process, I remember one case, we had an older horse that retired and it developed Cushing's and the treatment, and it started on one tablet and gradually went up to two tablets, went up to three tablets. And her and I had a conversation and she said that when we were getting up to four tablets, she just on the basis of cost, you would be struggling then to feed it properly and get the farrier and get the vaccines and get the dental work, the routine things to keep the horse well. And it was perfectly reasonable to use that as a gauge. But you know, other people might have been at two tablets or might have been at five tablets. There's no cutoff point, but you know your situation. And I'd hate for a horse to go without the basics because you were spending money on this or that you thought was keeping it going for that last month or two. And you know, none of us want our horses to not be looked after well right till the end, and sometimes the cost conversation has to be part of that.
Again, it's like giving them the everything they need, it's the cost. But I guess also as well, you know, if your housing for them, for instance, maybe isn't suitable for what their needs now, or if you can't give them these various things that they need, then sometimes putting them to sleep is the kindest thing we can do.
Yeah, we it's a way of preventing further suffering. Just really, really hard, you know. And yeah, we all feel guilty and sad and have all those emotions afterwards, and sometimes it's being aware that you'd be even more guilty and sad if you delayed it for more selfish reasons. It's very difficult, you know, that's very individual.
I think as well as the cost, I think like workload, like if your horse is maybe a condition that needs a lot of kind of quite intensive like care from the owner, or like a lot of visits per day, I think that can be another thing that owners might be able to struggle with, balancing that with their kind of rest of their life as well.
So we talked a bit about planning this process and having an end of life plan. What does that actually mean in practical sense? Are we talking a literal list here?
It seems to vary quite a lot. In my head, I think there's a few things it should have in. It should have what your preference for method of euthanasia is, on what your preference for afterwards you want done with the body, and it should have who in your stead could give authority and make that decision for you. Those are, for me, the very important aspects that I think need to be in the plan, and researching a little bit of those things helps people understand the process and not make it easier, but just take one of the stresses away and the difficulties away.
I think as well, like knowing what the costs are going to be of those things and knowing what the options involved, so like kind of body, like the kind of body care, like removal and like cremation or whatever option owners want to go for. I think obviously people might think about, obviously if you want the whole individual cremation with whole ashes back, can be very expensive, and you end up with a very large amount of ashes if you do that, which I think maybe some owners may not be expecting that if they don't find out about the price until the date the horse is being euthanized. So I think considering that in advance and then having more time to think about the options you want, and if you can't afford what you initially think of, you know, there are other ways to like memorialize your horse and other options, so you don't have to feel like you need to go for the most expensive one. But yeah, I think knowing things like that in advance can help people to not feel bad if they can't have, compared if they have to make that decision on the day. And I think also other things to consider, like, do you want to take things like mane and tail from your horse that you might want to use as a keepsake later? Because some people may then be upset if they're like, oh, I didn't think about that and I wish I had taken some tail from my horse. Because I know people like to make kind of memorial things. And I think other things could be like, do you want to be present? And do you want anyone to be there to support you as well? And yeah, have you asked that person to be there? And yeah, I think thinking about if you have other horses that were kind of close with that horse, do you want to let your other horses see the body? And will you have a horse that's left without a companion once you've had this one euthanized?
Yeah, some really good points there. I think as well, going back to the cost thing, probably if you've got a horse, say, on loan, who that cost falls to. Does it fall to you as the loaner, or does that fall on the owner? And at least if you've had that conversation and that agreement in advance, then it prevents any potential difficulties should that event occur. I mean, I have to say, if I'm drawing from personal experience here, when I lost my older horse, this was a conversation I'd had before, and I knew kind of what I wanted, and I talked it through, and it's just as well I had, because the day that she lay down in a field and wasn't going to get back up, I actually was in a completely different county. But because I'd had that conversation with my mother and the person who was looking after her for me, they knew exactly how I wanted that process to go. But one thing I hadn't thought of actually was the mane and tail, but my friend had, she took that thought of it for me. So I do have some of her hair in a jar in my office. But yeah, and it, I have to say, like, knowing that I'd had those conversations, it was a horrible, horrible day, but it meant that that process was much smoother and she could have what she needed. She could be put to sleep far quicker because it was already all sorted and all done. And yeah, so I think it's one of those things, like I say, we don't want to think about it, but if you do, then it does mean your horse can potentially have their suffering ended that little bit sooner.
Yeah, the point about the companion is important. We, with my sister's two older horses, when it was the right time for one, we actually let both go together. They were the only horses left on the farm, and they'd been together 20 odd years. At the stage my sister's life was at that stage, her dad was ill on the farm. We weren't going to be getting another horse. We weren't going to get another companion. It wasn't even in the medium-term plan, never mind short-term plan. And sometimes a lone companion is difficult to get. You know, it can be arranged, you know, but it can be difficult to get and things. So it's trying to have a bit of a, what would I like to do in that situation? Some people wouldn't have gone with what we did and wouldn't have let both go and would have got a companion or got a, you know, that, and there's nothing wrong with whatever route you choose to take. You're just better having a bit of a plan and a conversation so that you're not forced into maybe what you wouldn't have liked to do because of time pressures, or it's an emergency, or you're in a different county and nobody knows what you wanted. You know, those things can easily happen because as we know with horses, they don't read the textbooks.
No, they like to take matters into their own hooves.
Also, just going to say as well as the kind of the practical considerations for like what you actually want on the day, when you're doing a plan, it can also include a bit earlier, like, oh, what, you know, what things would make me consider that, think that I should consider euthanasia for both an emergency or maybe a chronic condition. Like, I guess if it's a chronic one, what are the signs that their conditions worsening, and for an emergency, thinking things like, oh, if my horse got colic, would I choose to go through surgery or not? Or if it, like, other things like that, yeah, would you put them through a major operation or not? And if you would, do you have transport that in an emergency they could get to a hospital as well? And yeah, as well as, will they load okay? Like, have, you know, if you want your horse to go, if it won't load, then that's something you need to think of. Maybe would you practice that in advance and things?
Insurance is a consideration too. I have broken my leg, it's an emergency, unfixable. Insurance companies tend to not question those sorts of things. But, some of the other conditions, the more chronic things, you often, if you want to make use of your insurance, would need to have a conversation with them beforehand, maybe even have a vet's report beforehand, so planned euthanasias and things. So it's, and I have a situation where, you know, young, fit, in work, horse, fully insured, but had colic, and it was so painful, it throwing itself on the ground, it wasn't fit to travel. So even though that owner would have, because it was a young horse, it was, you know, that it had a bit of a life afterwards, they would have put it through colic surgery, because it had a good chance of healing and recovering and getting back to full work. We couldn't actually give it the option, you know. I double and triple treated it with painkillers and everything in the back of the car, and it still wasn't transportable. So there unfortunately was a, it was a horrible scenario decision making, but the right decision for the horse had to be made in spite of all those other things.
Yeah, well, as again we say, they sometimes do take matters into their own hooves. So we've talked then about sort of this planning process and knowing what you want. So probably the next thing to do is actually to talk about what those options actually are. You know, if we're talking about planning a euthanasia, or you know, considering what your options are if you have one unexpectedly thrust upon you, what actually are some of the real considerations we have to think about here?
Well, for us in our practice, we do all of them by injection. Now, we don't actually have a gun in the practice. We don't have that option. We hadn't used it for over a decade, and the costs of maintaining it and the ammunition and just for something we never used wasn't worth our while. So we use the injectable. And for that scenario, you have to sort of think about where you're going to do it. You know, the we always give a little bit of sedative. We give the actual product in at the horse. Horses stand to the very, very last moment and then drop abruptly. And I always like to pre-warn my owners that that's going to happen. But where I'm putting the horse for that process, it might take a step to the side or forwards or backwards before it does that. Well, I don't want too tight an area. I don't want a hazard that it could fall onto or could push me onto. After I've injected it, I generally take hold of the horse myself and ask the owner just to step back, just because there's that little bit of unpredictability at that moment. You don't want anything else to go wrong as well and things there. And afterwards, there can be a bit of muscle twitching. There can be a gasp or a breath and things. And, you know, very rarely you sometimes even need to give a top up when the horse is lying on the ground and things. So having a little bit of an idea of what the process will look like, I think does help people, and it's a delicate conversation to try and describe that, you know, in a way that's that helps. Maybe having a friend who's been through it themselves to support you, so that they're not shocked by it, but they can be there for you. That helps a lot. It's not always possible, but that does help a lot and things. And sometimes where we do it is governed by what we're going to do with the body afterwards. You know, if we're going to bury it, then maybe walk the horse nearer to where the hole is. We're in the middle of the field. It's a nice environment and things there. Possibly give a little bit of sedative before you start walking across, because then it's calm and relaxed, you know. And whereas if the body's going to be collected for cremation or any of the other options and things, would the vehicle doing the collecting have access to where you are without it getting stuck, or will the horse need to be moved afterwards? And you know, there's a few things there that would need to be planned a little and considered.
I think, as well as kind of knowing what to expect. I think if your horse is being collected for cremation or anything, maybe suggesting that the owner probably doesn't want to be there for when they're collected, because it's hard, you know, that horses are such large animals, you can't really get them into a trailer in like a nice way. And I remember when I lost my first horse, I originally wanted to stay like the whole time, and like other people in my yard convinced me to not do that. And I think I am glad that, you know, I didn't have that as like the last image of him being taken away. Yeah, so knowing to like, you know, yeah, what kind of things to expect, or things that could be upsetting, like there might be other animals already on the lorry that's coming to collect them, depending on where it's coming from. And that, if you're not expecting that, that could be an upsetting thing to see as well. And yeah, there's also one thing, I was with another owner from my yard, and she was upset that her horse's eyes stayed open when after he was put to sleep. And I think that's, you know, knowing to expect things like that, so it's not like a shock, can be important.
Yeah, I often say to folks that there isn't a dignified way to move, even a Shetland pony. They can be a couple of hundred kilos in weight. There just isn't a dignified way to do it. And the open eyes thing is often commented upon. And I often say to folks, well, the reason on the TV that the people who've died are of closed eyes is because those actors are still alive. You know, all mammals' eyes are open once they've passed away. And that's, it's actually completely normal. It's just completely unexpected, because our visuals on the television are closed eyes, aren't they? And things,
yeah.
Even in an open casket in a human, you know, those eyes are artificially closed. But it's something nobody ever really talks about and says to people. And as you say, Amelia, it's it can be disconcerting afterwards for people. Yeah.
Yeah, because I suppose no matter what we call it, it isn't actually going to sleep in that way. It's something else.
That is an important thing, is phraseology around this. You know, it's the very last thing you want is a miscommunication of intentions or wants and things. So you need to be sure that people around you are on the same page. You know, euthanasia is a very formal word, but it does only have one meaning. Even if you only say it once, and then the rest of the time you talk about putting them to sleep or letting them go or any of the other phrases, that's fine. But at least people know where you are as the owner and these sort of things. It's you're right. Language is important in these scenarios.
There are obviously also some very practical steps that come with a horse dying. I'm thinking more, we briefly touched on insurance, but there are steps you have to go through with that. There's also steps you have to go through with the passport as well, and things like that.
Yeah, it's often the last thing on people's minds to send the passport back to the passport issuer, but that's what the passport regulations say you should do. Most passport issuers are happy to return it if you request it. They generally mark it as the horse is deceased and things, but if you do want it as a memento, they're most happy to do so. That's often very much the bottom of the list of things. Nobody thinks about it. You're right, Rachel. That's it is part of it and things. Even just stopping the direct debit for your insurance policy, you know, it's the sort of administrative things are at the bottom of the list to do, but maybe should be somewhere there on your plan. Yeah.
I think another thing is that if you didn't want your horse to be buried, you'd have to check. I think you have to comply with different regulations. And it depends, you might have to get permission, I think, from the council sometimes if you want to bury it. And I think it depends if it's close to like a water source and things. So I think if your choice is that you'd like your horse to be buried, then yeah, you need to check if you can like meet the criteria where you want it to be buried for that to happen.
Yeah, and I think it differs between home nations as well as to how animals are classified as to whether or not you can bury them as well. So yeah, definitely doing a bit of research into that and thinking about it in advance, because that's quite a big hole that's going to need to be dug. So obviously that, again, that's something you're going to probably want to do in advance and have ready the day that happens, so that the body can go straight in the hole rather than you then having to bring in the digger.
Sometimes that's the difference between planned and sort of emergency euthanasia. Is it's much more difficult in an emergency situation for that to happen. You know, it's, you know, an old horse that's down on a frozen middle of winter time, maybe the burial option isn't available for you, even if that's what you want. You know, it's so it's or a you know, I had one a few weeks ago, you know, broken leg at an event in the warm-up, do you know? So it wasn't even at home. There's a heck of a lot of things that the ifs and buts that could happen and things that's not easy to organise. But plan for what you can plan, I think, is sensible. Yeah.
Yeah. And if burial isn't your choice, you, for whatever reason, you don't have the space to do it, or regulations mean you can't, what options have we got in terms of having that body taken away? We've mentioned the fact that, you know, it might be a cremation, whether that's an individual cremation or mixed in with other animals, but are there any other options we've got?
Well, there's the fallen stock collectors, the sort of agricultural fallen stock collectors. Do you know, they and most vets would have contact details for those if you didn't have them yourself. And they, equally, the cremation, most vets would have contact details for the folks who would do cremation in the area and things. Your livery yard owner might do as well and things. There aren't a lot of other options nowadays. There aren't very many hunts anymore around the country, so that used to be an option, but I don't think that's very common. Occasionally, if you're close to a vet school, maybe there's a potential for donating the body, these sorts of things. Or if your horse is already at the vet school, you might be happy for it to have a post-mortem and sort of a teaching learning from there, and then afterwards maybe it be cremated and things. So sometimes situations bring up an option which might not have even been on your list of things either.
Yeah, I'll have to say the one that always slightly shocks people is my horse actually went to the zoo. We had a local one, and so she was taken away by the suppliers who supplied them with their animal carcasses, and she went to the zoo. I figured I'd had lots of good days out there as a child. This was me giving something back in a slightly flippant way.
It's all individual, yeah, and there's nothing wrong with what somebody chooses to do. It's their horse, and yeah, a situation like that arises, and you've got that option, and you want to choose that option. There's nothing wrong with that, and that's what I meant by that. You know, I did think when we were talking there that, you know, that the at a vet school where it's, or a veterinary hospital where it's been referred for something like colic surgery and sadly doesn't make it. You know, then the teaching case post-mortem, it might not have been on your plan because you might not have planned what could happen if it happened away from your livery yard, away from your home or your field, you know, and you shouldn't have to plan for everything, but it's worth just being a little bit aware that other options may present themselves.
Also, I don't know if this may not be like up-to-date information, but a few years ago, I know that there was, I think, at least one equine abattoir in the UK that there may be a few horses that could be sent there. Obviously, if they've had things like bute, then they have to be signed out of the food chain, but there may be a few horses that could potentially be an option. I think that would be one of the cheaper options if cost wasn't a kind of a factor for that person. But I don't know if it's true that there is still one operating in the UK or not.
The ones that we're operating were a very long way from me, so being in Scotland, it never came up as an option for us and things. That, you know, why would you transport your horse all the way down the south? Mm-hmm. But equally, if you're local to things like that, I'd say it's a bit like your zoo example. There's no wrong decisions. If it's right for you, then it's right for you. And if you're on a livery yard and you see somebody else making a different decision to what you'd make for yourself, maybe just take a beat before you comment upon it, because it's a hard enough time for that person anyway. And say nothing is better than saying criticism for somebody in that situation. To put yourself in their shoes and how you would be feeling. And just be aware that option's there for you in the future if with your horse, and you might not have thought about it.
Yeah, because that's the thing, as horse owners, we all have to be prepared that at some point we may have to make that decision. We may be in those shoes and be the one who's having to face the difficult decision of it, whether it needs doing and then how to do it. So, yeah, no judgment here.
I think as well, if people are like looking for options on the Equine End of Life Service website, they have you can like put in your postcode and find kind of collectors and services local to you that you can, if you haven't got a suggestion from your vet or you want to look at other options as well.
Yes, which leads me quite nicely on to what resources are actually out there. There are there's quite a few, and we have talked, obviously your vet is probably your first port of call with a lot of this, but we'll be doing some signposting to this on our website and on our social media channels. But the British Horse Society do offer a Friends at the End support scheme, where they will have volunteers who can help you through this process, both in the build-up and whether it's the right decision to make, and on the day if you need someone who is maybe a little bit outside your inner circle, you need someone there to support you, hold your hand, hold the horse, whatever needs doing, just have a cup of tea with afterwards if you want to talk it through. So all the information for that is on their website, and as I say, we will be signposting to that on our social media and also on the hub for Equine Health Week on the British Equestrian website. So that's www.britishequestrian.org.uk. But where else could people look if they want to find out more? Is there any useful guides or information out there for people?
So the Blue Cross also have like a pet loss service, and that's for like a range of companion animals, including horses. I think they've got a kind of a phone support line that you can call. And also I think by email as well, that if you want to speak to someone, I think either before you've made the decision or if you want support afterwards as well. And at the moment, they're not publicly available yet. I am working on resources called the Trusted Resources. This is like a guide for owners to use with their vets when kind of planning for end of life and making decisions throughout their, throughout your horse's life, from kind of, it could be from when you first got your horse up until euthanasia needs to be decided. And that includes like a plan that owners can fill in with their vets with things like considerations for practical euthanasia considerations on the day and things they want to look at before that quality of life. So those are, we're currently trialing them with vets and owners to get feedback, and then we'll be using that to make any updates, and then so the plan is to release them later this year, so hopefully people will find that helpful for them.
Yeah, I found some of the rescue and horse welfare type charities often have useful help, and even if they don't have an official helpline, they're very compassionate people, and they will have been in those situations, and I'm sure would help as much as they can. I've had the odd conversation with owners about what would happen to their horse if they died, and that's some of them have asked if they made a plan that they shared with their husband or put in their will, would that be okay? And then, they have a variety of options. And we have generally always agreed with those, whatever people want to do. But it's something we maybe don't think about as easily. You might write a will for your loved ones, for your house and these sort of things. But a horse is as a cherished part of your life as a child is in a lot of people's cases. And so at least leaving some indication of what you'd like in the future. If it's a young horse, would you be happy for your family to sell it so it carries on being used by somebody else and has a long, fulfilling life? If it's an older horse and it's on chronic medication, are you happy for that euthanasia conversation if there isn't a horse person to look after them and things? Those types of considerations are hard to think about, because it's the whole, should I write a will? I'm only 35, or I'm only 50, I'm only 75, I'm going to live forever, but an accident, you could get run over by a bus tomorrow. Would somebody else be, even just a day-to-day care for your horse in that initial period, is there somebody like that and things? It's not a thing that many people spoke about.
No, it's a very good point, thank you for that. As we kind of come to the end of this conversation, are there any points that you particularly want to pick up on that maybe we've missed, or any sort of closing statements, for want of a better phrase, that you'd like to put out there and leave as parting thoughts for our listeners?
I think like kind of emphasizing that there's like no right or wrong way to feel when you're having, you've made a euthanasia decision, because you're likely to be feeling like a range of emotions, and people often feel guilty for choosing euthanasia, even if it's, the best thing for their horse. So I think, just trying to emphasize that, usually you are choosing the best thing, doing like the best thing for your horse, and it is a really horrible decision to have to make, and it is really hard. Even if some people might feel things like relief if they don't have to, not have, there's been like a large burden for caring or financially, and I think that people shouldn't feel bad for feeling like that either, because that is a valid way to feel.
No, I think that's a really important way, really important to mention. It's a very difficult decision, and there's a lot of, as you say, a lot of emotions that come with it, but ultimately we want the best for our horses, and that follows through right to the very end. And this often is the best thing we could do for them, and it's better to do it a day early than a week too late.
I had a couple of thoughts. One of the other potential euthanasia decision making is, you know, an untreatable disease or illness that your horse, you know, and that could be suddenly upon you. You know, you could ring the vet or you know, get your horse examined because it's ill and turns out it's got something which is untreatable or a low success rate and things there. And euthanasia needs to be part of the conversation around that. And that, it's hard to bring that up, especially if it's unexpected or a younger horse even. You know, I think it's almost a little easier with the broken leg scenario, or I've had Cushing's disease or laminitis for the last 2 years, and we've gradually been getting, you know, there's a accumulation to get to there. But sometimes a sudden untreatable thing can happen. And the other thing I didn't mention, if we're doing euthanasia on a yard scenario, is even being aware of what time of day, who else might be around. Could there be children who own horses there? And, you know, there's a lot of that. And if you're choosing maybe a gun method of euthanasia, the noise for other horses or other people on the yard or in the environment, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of those choices. There's nothing wrong with choosing to do it the weekend or at night because it's what suits you. But there's an aspect of the other people around you, the public around it, you know, if it's a Friday night euthanasia because of a sudden thing, you know, can we cover it over with a blanket? Is it visible from the road? Do you know, sometimes it can't be collected till the Monday afterwards. And there's a few other factors there that are difficult to plan for, but should at least be considered.
Yeah, no, really valid points there. And actually, one thing that we could probably have touched on a little bit more, it did come up very briefly, is around other horses seeing the body. And actually, this is something I think that's becoming more and more common as a way to help other horses come to terms with what's happened.
I like to recommend a horse's companions are able to say goodbye afterwards to the body. And I do warn owners that sometimes horses are almost hard-hearted about it. They'll walk across the field, take one sniff, and then start eating the grass right next to their, you know, 20 years bosom field pals that you would think they but they're herd animals. There's an acceptance. And I think sometimes they do know if one of their herd has been deteriorating and is getting iller and is coming to the end. And so long as they have a chance to know the end has happened, there's a less of a worry there. It's much harder. A horse referred for colic surgery and never comes back from the vet school. Those companions, they've never got that chance. And we genuinely see a sort of mourning grief process. Some don't eat so well. They almost make themselves ill. And it's can't be avoided in that scenario. But if the horse is there, I do like that. Where you do it then has a consideration of that. You know, you know, if you're going to let the horse go and sniff the body on its own, you want that in a semi-secure area so that if your horse takes a jump at the body, it doesn't run off onto the road and things. So it's another aspect of planning that might be need to take into consideration.
Yeah, I think from my experience with my horses as well, I was when my first horse had euthanasia, my other horse see him. And I think that, you know, if we had, they were like very, very bonded, and they'd, you know, if you took one out the field, they'd be like calling for each other and things. So I think if we hadn't done that, I think, you know, I think she would have struggled a lot more, because she did call for him a bit, you know, like the next few days, even though we'd let her see him. But I think, but not like the way that she'd normally call if he'd then been like just been taken out of the field, where it could kind of be relentless. So I think, you know, I think otherwise it would have been where's he gone? Like, is he going to come back? Like, not knowing. But, you know, I think, you know, they can tell when their companions have passed away.
Yeah, definitely. And again, because that's the thing, if we're leaving other horses behind, we have to factor them in and make sure that they can deal with this process, as well as thinking about our own emotional needs as well.
I think also I'm not like an expert about donkeys, but I know that donkeys can get like especially attached to their companion, and if one is euthanized, then they might kind of struggle more than some horses would with that. So I don't know if it's if the person is in a position to get another companion, if they know that there's going to be a planned euthanasia, maybe I don't know if it'd be helpful to kind of phase in another companion as well before they've had one, the other one put down. Because I know that they can, some donkeys will like stop eating and things as well.
Yeah, the donkey sanctuary is very good with resources and help and advice, and it certainly, donkeys are more pair bonded with them. But yeah, options like you've discussed, Amelia, are very sensible with donkeys and things. And certainly if we have somebody ring and they're worried about their old donkey, it's part of the conversation we have, is to have you thought about the donkey's companion.
Right. Well, I think we're coming to the end of this episode. There's been a lot to think about, a lot of things. Hopefully people will go away and actually have sit and spend 20 minutes thinking about all of this and what they are going to do if and when that situation comes to them. We've mentioned obviously lots of resources there, so do check those out, and we will be signposting some things on the hub. I've mentioned the website address already, but if you need it again, it's britishequestrian.org.uk. If you have missed any of the episodes across Equine Health Week, the podcast episodes, you will find them wherever you found this one, whether that's on your podcast platform or through the British Equestrian website. And we have covered the entire life cycle of our horses, all the way from breeding and foals through to what we've discussed today. So make sure you check those out. And also, as I've said, all the other assets on the website. Thank you very much to both Alistair and Amelia for joining me today and sharing your expertise on this topic. I know it's sometimes a difficult conversation for us to have, but I think as we've established today, it's a very necessary one to have. So thank you both.
Thank you for having us. It's been, it's been good to chat.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it's a really important topic.
And we look forward, Amelia, to seeing when your guide and your plan do come out to fruition. And thank you, everyone, of course, for listening as well. So we hope you will join us for another chat very, very soon.